Welcome to Shortcut to Sunday. I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce.
And this is your podcast for January 7th, 2024. the Epiphany of Our Lord, the first Epiphany Sunday.
The Epiphany of Our Lord transferred one day, because it's January 6th is the Feast of the Epiphany. We are transferring it to the 7th.
Got it. I forget where I was in the introduction, but we're coming to you not live on behalf of Holy Family Episcopal Church in Fishers, Indiana. Bruce, how are you doing today?
I am good. I fulfilled my Christmas season goal
of
watching the latest installment of the Indiana Jones movies.
Ah, so the Dial of Destiny.
The Dial of Destiny.
What did you think?
It wasn't as bad as the review said.
some people let nostalgia demons get in the way of their fun.
Of course.
No, I get it. We're gonna switch real quick to a movie review with Ben and Bruce.
Yeah.
I thought it wasn't too bad. There were I really enjoyed the technical achievement of that they were able to do with de-aging.
Surprised how well that looked.
There was a lot. It was a lot better. There were still some moments, but the technical side of my brain acknowledges they utilized things like lighting changes that makes that CGI process really, really difficult. So they did a really good job for that.
See, and what I paused and rewound for repeatedly. The train sequence.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. It looked like 30-year-old Harrison Ford, but sounded like 78-year-old Harrison Ford.
Well, and I don't mean Harrison Ford in those sequences.
Yeah.
I mean the train.
Yeah, the train. Yeah, no, the train.
Being who I am, it's like, okay, is that a model or is it CGI? It's like CGI.
Almost all CGI.
Yeah.
So, not a bad movie.
Not a bad movie. And just so everyone knows, in real life, train cars do not have windows at their ends.
Oh, yeah.
Which was part of the action sequence.
Yeah. No, it's
but
often.
But enjoy it. It's an entertainment.
That's often the way it is in movies, right?
Yeah.
Like a window at the end of the train.
Yeah.
No. Trains get pushed and pulled.
Yeah.
Right? So... I appreciate that bit of attention to detail in your mm-hmm. movie watching. I'm glad that you were able to fulfill that promise.
Goal, that little goal for Christmas season.
You know what? It's the small victories in life.
That's right.
So this is our... Hey, listeners, welcome to 2024. The good news is it's going to be... just as bad as last year. I'm going to ruin it for you.
Did you use your Dial of Destiny?
Everyone always has these new and hope. I've never understood it. This sense of hope that next year will be so much better. I like the renewal aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, the renewal of, but you know, this idea that next year will be so much better. If only we'll just, no, it's not.
It's just the turning of the calendar page.
Not that I'm here to dash hope in general, but...
Yeah, that generally you don't do that. So you're entitled this time.
But just prep for, another...
Brace for impact.
Mediocre, hope for a mediocre year. I think that's as best as we can all hope for. And maybe, who knows, maybe you individually will be surprised.
Yeah.
We're in 2024 for year B now, which is wild that time has marched so quickly.
Yeah.
As far as things going on in the church right now, we're still doing a little bit of Christmas recovery from our 4,000 services. but this this coming Friday, if you're listening to this before Friday, we're having game night at the church at 7:00, and a couple of the folks wanted to do something a little special, and we're going to do that, which is we're going to have a Hot Ones challenge that goes along with it. So if you're interested in partaking and seeing how far down the heat gauntlet you can do,
Or just watch others.
Feel free to let me know. You can email at shortcut@hfec if you're interested, so that I can make sure I have enough wings, boneless, bone run, or vegetarian, or whatever needs to be.
Feathers on, feathers off.
Whole chicken.
That, for the geeks that, among us, we'll have
that seventh heads of whole chicken is really just a lot to get through. That'll be a lot of fun coming up this Friday. On Sunday we have our, music meditation, newest music meditation. I don't know much about is there a theme for this coming Sunday?
There is, but Joel wasn't at church this week, so I couldn't give him my monthly quiz of, I forgot what you said before. So what is it? That's on me.
He always does a great job. He does. So there's no need to be concerned about whether or not it'll be good.
I am right.
Positive it'll be fantastic. So look for that. That's 7 o'clock in the sanctuary on Sunday. Anything else we need to point out?
Just going to throw it out there that the bishop's making her every other year visit on Sunday, February 18th.
Okay.
And so if anyone's interested in confirmation, having their confirmation reaffirmed, it would be good if you attended classes Sunday mornings at 9 a.m.
Okay. Sounds good there.
Yeah. I'll be teaching them. Feel free to email me to get more info.
Okay. Email Bruce. And that would be B Gray.
Yeah.
With an A.
Yeah.
B Gray with an A at hfec.org.
Yeah.
Well, let's move to this day in church history. Our first, there's actually not too many on New Year's Eve. this is not New Year's Eve. This is for the 7th. We're recording on New Year's Eve, and my brain isn't working. The first entry comes from 312 AD. Lucian, presbyter of Antioch, is tried and executed for his faith in Nicomedia, is what it says. And I wanted to say Nicodemia. Do you any idea where Nicomedia is?
No.
Quick Google search tells me, Greek. Oh, it's a city, a Greek city located in what is now Turkey.
Oh,
so,
okay. Now I've totally lost track what you were talking about.
So it was, Lucian, the presbyter of Antioch, is tried and executed for his faith in this city.
Oh, okay.
And Nicomedia became the eastern and most senior capital of the Roman Empire, a status which the city maintained during the Tetrarchy system.
Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah. Me either. 1450, there's like nothing for 1,000 years. Pope Nicholas V issues a papal bull, acceding to a request from King James II to establish a university in Glasgow.
Oh, good.
So, education, good.
Good thing.
Bonus. 1715, death of François Fénelon, Archbishop of Cambria, France, who had written on Christian love and perfection. Perfection, dangerous topic.
Yep. can never get that right.
Yeah, it's just always a little off. 1822, the Tsarist regime, hoping to strengthen Christian presence in the Caucasus and convert Muslims, authorizes separatists who rejected state Lutheranism to create missionary colonies in the Caucasus. Basil missionaries soon establish a missionary school and a printing house in Shusha. Where is this? Christianity in Azerbaijan.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
That's cool.
We don't get too many references.
Yeah, it's certainly a strong Muslim area now.
Yeah. So, 1868, death in Montclair, New Jersey of William B. Bradbury. If that name sounds familiar, he's a composer of the tunes to which we sing many well-loved hymns, including Jesus Loves Me, Savior Like a Shepherd Lead Me, Take My Life and Let It Be, Sweet Hour of Prayer, and Just As I Am, and many others. He published 59 collections of sacred and secular music. So
that's a lot.
Yeah. William B. Bradbury, for music lovers, it should be a name that rings a bell.
Put him on your Spotify.
There's something else about Bradbury. I know there's plenty. Actually, I do know. There's a lot of choral collections that are done under the Bradbury name. There's like a Bradbury collection that our choir sings from every once in a while. 1870, Isabel Thoburn of Ohio arrives in India, where she becomes a great missionary educator. No clue as to what area of Christianity that comes from. And no clue in the from the authority of the date.
Okay.
Life of Isabel Thoburn. So, no clue. And then 1917, baptism of Elijah Titus Latunde. At 12 years of age, he will become... Baptism at 12 years of age. The way I read that made it sound like the next statement was going to be at 12 years. He will become the third president of the Christ Apostolic Churches in Nigeria, which will experience phenomenal growth under his leadership. He will also spearhead secular development projects and serve as a pacemaker with Muslims in the area. So, there you go.
There you Elijah go.
Titus Latunde. Well, let's move on to our reading.
Shall we?
If we shall, and we shall. If we must, and we must. Isaiah is our first reading. Isaiah 60, 1 through 6. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice, because the abundance of the sea shall be brought to you. The wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you, the young camels of Midian and Ephah. All those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring their gold and frankincense and shall proclaim the praise of the Lord. Isaiah chapter 60, third Isaiah.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the we back, baby. entry.
And we're cool.
This is... I don't know, it's written as though, like, this is about to happen, but then there's some phrasing that sounds like, hey, it's already happening. Like, the evidence is already here. So, I don't know as if, whether or not this is more prophetic as far as, like, down the road, or if it is kind of, like, written in a time where, like, the people are already starting to see... you know, prosperity return to the region or what, but,
well, if we look at the rest of the chapter,
no, I don't want to do that. Only context, six verses,
never
six verses. And that's it. How much more, you know, what more do you want?
The, if we look at the rest of the chapter,
fine.
It's definitely future.
Okay. Okay.
And it's almost mystical.
Okay.
And then, you know, it's the old thing, too bad we didn't get to keep reading. Verse 8 says, who are these that fly like a cloud and like doves to their windows?
Who are they?
Yeah. and it's about, you know, people almost supernaturally being drawn to and arriving at Jerusalem and its surrounding area.
Okay. I don't know. It does not sound comfortable to me, this phrasing, this idea of being covered with a multitude of camels.
I think we talked about this one time.
Did we? It just sounds, I mean, obviously it's not like on top of you, but right. Like, I'm imagining like, equal levels of like locusts as far as like the miracles and devastation over Egypt that led to their like just being covered with camels. Like there's barely any room to walk. I'm curious why camels and why young camels of Midian and Ephah. and all of those from Sheba. Like, this reference is lost on me. Like, the other stuff sounds understandable, realistic, right? Like, look up and, you know, you're going to, again, some shining beacon on, you know, city of on a hill kind of language at the top, and sons and daughters will return home. That makes sense to me, considering the historical circumstance around when this was written. People returning to their homeland after having been scattered during the conquest, mm-hmm. and rejoicing and thrilling. The abundance of the seas shall be brought to you, and all this, you know, the wealth of nations. All this language talking about return to prominence and
prosperity,
and then like. I mean, are camels like just right there as far as like mentality of like, oh, if you're doing well, you gotta have a lot of camels.
That is it.
Okay.
Because camels are the private jets of that era.
I was thinking like a collector cars. Is this like a
well
like
more practical though?
Okay.
Because they're literally the pack animals for trade, international trade.
Like the Jay Leno of camel collections.
Well, I love cars, but even I can't go there.
This young camel from Sheba goes from like a zero to like a 15 miles an hour in like 4.5 seconds.
It's a regional saddle.
That's a terrible Jay Leno of mine. I recognize
better than mine could be. it's.
Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
Can you just imagine? driving down the street.
Okay, so camels also represent,
they're the big rigs.
Yeah, okay.
Of trade.
Okay.
And
oh, that makes sense. Okay, so like trading, like also signifying trading prosperity with faraway lands.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Okay. Which makes sense as far as like bringing gold and frankincense. That, you know, that does kind of seem trade oriented, but then those two particular items are also very kingly, right?
Which two?
Gold and frankincense.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, so well, because they're expensive.
Gotcha.
They're not necessarily royal, but okay. it's a wealthy person's possession.
What about the references to Midian, Epa, and Sheba? Like, are those nations that you know the Israelites would have been like, oh, we're gonna trade with them.
Yes.
Oh, but, Sheba.
but also they were referred to in the Book of Kings.
Mm.
And so it's like these are the long time prosperous lands that we're now going to be in, not just in their league, but we'll be in charge of that league.
Gotcha.
We'll be in first place.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so really when they're talking about a multitude of camels shall cover you, it's like everyone's going to scramble to trade with you. Like, yeah. People are going to be, please, let's do trade. Let's.
Well, and what the presumption is in the Hebrew is that it's not cover you, but cover your land.
Sure.
And so it's more like, you know, your ports will be overflowing with ships. Mm-hmm. Trying to drop their containers off.
Mm-hmm.
And the highways will be almost choked with the big rigs driving the new big screen TVs to your local Walmarts. And
Yeah, okay.
Everything's prosperous and not just as good as it was, but much better than it was. Mm-hmm. And not just as good as these historic places, but better than these historic places. And our camels are young, so this is going to last a while.
Okay, interesting. Well, and I think you kind of hinted at the answer to this question, but I'll ask it anyways. Does it happen?
No. Well, it doesn't happen to the degree that is found here. Certainly, Israel does return to a certain level of prosperity. Because that makes it worth conquering, which will happen.
Gotcha.
By the Greeks and the Romans.
Yeah.
And then it's gone.
Mm. Mm. So this is more aspirational.
Well, it's supposed to be. Yes. but it is supposed to be, it's written in the form of prophecy. Mm-hmm. So it's not, this is what you're supposed to want. This is what this you're supposed to expect.
Okay.
So, you know, this is your visualized future, and live into it.
Okay. Interesting. All right.
And
go ahead.
We play with it as Christians as describing the appearance of the three kings mm-hmm. to the baby Jesus, which in the Gospel of Matthew, we'll get into that later, never says three, doesn't say where they're from. From this passage is where details have been drawn out through the historic, through the time, through history, and transferred into the realm of history, even though it's like, eh, not really.
Gotcha. Okay, well then we'll kind of do a re-reference when we get there.
Yeah, this okay. is foreshadowing.
Okay, all right. Well, let's move on to our psalm reading. Psalm 72, 1 through 7, and then 10 through 14. Give the king your justice, O God, and your righteousness to a king's son. May he judge your people with righteousness and your poor with justice. May the mountains yield prosperity for the people and the hills in righteousness. May he defend the cause of the poor of the people, give deliverance to the needy, and crush the oppressor. May he live while the sun endures and as long as the moon throughout all generations. May he be like rain that falls on mown grass, like showers that water the earth. In his days may righteousness flourish and peace abound until the moon is no more. May the kings of Tarshish and the isles render him tribute. May the kings of Sheba and Seba bring gifts. May all kings fall down before him, all nations give him service. For he delivers the needy when they call, the poor and those who have no helper. He has pity on the weak and the needy, and saves the lives of the needy. From oppression and violence he redeems their life, and precious is their blood in his sight. What do we know about Psalm 72?
Not much.
Okay.
It's, at some point after it was written, a superscription was added to it of Solomon.
Mm.
Because it talks about the king's son, and the only king's son that later scribes knew about from scripture was Solomon, son of David.
Gotcha.
The only good son. So
yeah, this does kind of read like a private prayer between in my mind, like an aging king, praying for wisdom for the upcoming prince, as it were.
And that's as likely and accurate as anything else we know about it.
Oh, well, likely and accurate. Two nicknames in college. Wait, no. Does that work?
Well, it sure beats stinky.
That's true. But yeah, it does kind of, like I said, in reading that, that was my mental image was my son is going to have to take over the king, the kingship. Please be mm-hmm. with him, guide him with wisdom and compassion and care. But I could see also with it being chosen for this week, there's some very similar through lines that kind of play with what we've just read and what we will read. What do we skip though? 8, 9, and 10 or 8 and 9.
They are requests for military victory.
Oh, like specific military victory or like,
well, I'll just read general. It. It's so short. May you have dominion from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. May his foes bow down before him and his enemies lick the dust.
Okay. Yeah. So from the sea to the river is what was that? Okay.
Well, it says from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth.
Okay. So sea to sea maybe at that point in time they would, they would know maybe the sea on the opposite.
Well,
the
geography.
I'm just trying to think of the geography of the area. So there's, the Mediterranean Sea, and then I'm thinking more like southeast might be the reference. The which
it could be too, like where the Suez Canal is.
Now. But then the reference to the river to the ends of the earth is probably the river there in what's the name of the river?
Jordan?
The Jordan. Yeah, the Jordan, and then the ends of the earth is like, I don't know, west, beyond the sea.
Well, a lot of scholars think it, rather than the Jordan, it's a little further away, the Euphrates, which is, present-day Iraq, I think it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's further, but big again part of lands that are quite prosperous and would be fantastic additions to anyone's territory.
Right. Is this at 14? Is that the end of the psalm, or does it go on?
Oh, it goes on.
May he also stop licking paint.
Keep the white paint of leadenness from his lips.
Right. Does it continue in the same kind of voice, like and style? Like, is it just continued request for prosperity to the king and dominion during his reign?
Yes, to the second.
Okay.
And so I think one of the reasons we don't get to read it. On this coming Sunday, is that it strays from the idea that this is a partial prophecy of the Magi visiting the baby Jesus.
Gotcha. Well, we Christians do love our prophecies.
Yes, no matter how convoluted and
and non-existent it actually
forced.
Oh, it's a prophecy. I'm like, no, it's about something totally different.
It's about a king who's going to conquer areas, and it says things like, about the king, may his name endure forever. And again, the king doesn't refer to Jesus. It refers to the Magi.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it'd be easier to use the part of the psalm that we skip if we were using it on a feast day simply about Jesus.
Gotcha.
Rather than about the Magi.
Gotcha. It really does have a lot of very similar language to the Isaiah reading.
Yeah.
And
the part that we're not using has additional. There's more gold of Sheba mentioned and stuff.
Oh, okay.
That.
Yeah. That Sheba gold. what's the name? Sheba Inu. There's an electronic currency. Which is like Shiba Inu coin. I forget.
That would make sense.
Anything else about this psalm?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. All right. Let me see here. Where are we on time? We're under a half hour.
Wow! Oh, that's because we didn't do much with history.
That's true. We didn't. There's not enough history. Do you want to do a quick Ephesians history and throw it in there?
Sure.
Why not? Ephesians chapter 3. What I love about this is I'm throwing him for a loop, so he's not prepared for it at all. Ephesians chapter 3, verses 1-12. This is the reason that I, Paul, am a prisoner for Christ Jesus for the sake of you Gentiles. For surely you have heard of the commission of God's grace that was given me for you, and how the mystery was made known to me by revelation, as I wrote above in a few words, a reading of which will enable you to perceive my understanding of the mystery of Christ. In former generations, this mystery was not made known to humankind, as it has now been revealed to his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit. That is, the Gentiles have become fellow heirs, members of the same body, and sharers in the promise in Christ Jesus through the gospel. Of this gospel, I have become a servant, according to the gift of God's grace that was given me by the work of his power. Although I am the very least of all the saints, this grace was given to me to bring to the Gentiles the news of the boundless riches of Christ, and to make everyone see what is the plan of the mystery hidden for ages in God who created all things, so that through the church the wisdom of God in its rich variety may now be made known to the rulers and authorities into the heavenly places. This was in accordance with the eternal purpose that he has carried out in Christ Jesus our Lord, in whom we have access to God in boldness and confidence through faith in him. This is essentially Paul's mission statement. I feel it's relatively long. It does really kind of do a decent job of establishing, hey, here's where I'm coming from. Here's my point. And, if you know nothing else, this is what I want you to know, about, who I am and why I'm writing things. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
But I'm trying to remember, is Ephesians the one book that isn't Paul?
Oh, it's not the only one.
Okay. It's one of the major ones.
It's the one that's most famously not Paul.
Gotcha.
Because it's close.
Uh-huh.
But okay, what scholars think is that as Christians were gathering together Paul's letters, there were some like, who is this one to? Questions going on. And so, make a long story short, it was decided by somebody, probably a group of somebodies, to put together the different pieces and declare that they were written to the Ephesians.
Oh, okay.
Because the Ephesians were kind of like the, generic Christians.
Gotcha.
But the writing style, the vocabulary, the theological concerns are different from anything else Paul wrote.
Okay.
So it really does look like it certainly was not a single letter Paul wrote.
Mm-hmm.
The best we can say was probably a collection with a lot of editing. And part of the editing was making these long sentences that even the New Revised Standard Version, which loves to say we are as close to the original as possible, threw in the towel and broke into smaller sentences.
Yeah.
So you read it well, and if we had the original Greek, you would not have been able to read it that well.
Yeah. No.
No one would.
I do know writers like that. long sentences.
Oh, I was like that.
This is it, at the very least is done in the style, the attempted style of Paul.
Oh yeah.
Then one aspect of like, I feel like one of his main points was this idea of, hey, this is no longer a Jewish thing. It's for the world. I feel like he did make that point in several letters that we do feel a lot more confident were less, at the very least, less heavily edited.
But there's that also makes it a possibility that this is the summation that Paul's scholars at the time put together
and wrote.
Which on, doesn't on mean his it's behalf. Wrong.
Right. Sure. For sure. We do kind of get hung up with if he didn't write it, he didn't pen it himself, right, then it's not. That's it plagiarism, or that's a fake, and that's not really quite how it worked back then,
right?
So,
and particularly with this letter, it does not, unlike Paul's genuine letters, it doesn't put itself in a congregational context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Corinthians he writes very explicitly about people not sharing food at the potluck dinners.
Calls out a couple of people.
Calls out a couple. Yeah.
Hey, I know your name, and I shouldn't.
Yeah. I've never heard it put that way. Exactly. Well said. And so that's one of the, that's one of the reasons why it was probably clear, actually, even back then, that this was not penned by Paul at a single seating.
Right.
But instead, there are bits and pieces of Paul here, and folks that were very wise did the connecting clauses and stuff to make it coherent. But almost certainly the earliest listeners were like, yeah, I don't think that's Paul, but it's still good stuff. So let's keep it.
Yeah. And I will say, it doesn't always happen with our lectionary, the lectionary choices that get made. The second reading, or the reading from the New Testament, doesn't always kind of fit the theme mold.
Particularly during the ordinary time.
Right. So I don't know, if it, just happens to coincide with a potential theme, or if it expressly was picked for to go along with this theme. It's a little bit looser, but I like the kind of the through line that it pairs with between the New Testament or the Old Testament reading and the gospel reading, and kind of sandwiched by the psalm reading, and that is this prosperity vision, and would have at this point in time been like a long-standing promise to the Israelites of like someday this is coming, and a well-known kind of prophecy among the Jewish nation. So the idea that Paul is now like writing these letters and saying, hey, this has been going on for a long time, this promise, this prophecy, and I'm here to tell you that it was solely thought to be just for this group of people, and it was so solely thought to be that there was going to be this promise that was regional. Yeah. And now that I have had been witness to this, I believe I'm now realizing that it's not this nation over this nation or this people over this people, that it's much bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And that the promise is actually to everybody, which really is would be a very big revelation. Yeah. Of sorts.
Well, because, yeah, it's really having to shift people's perspectives who were Jewish.
Right. I mean, you think of, you know, the idea of a prophecy of sorts, and even whether that's in historical context or, you know, your favorite fantasy literature, it almost always is like this idea of like, oh no, this is going to happen in this specific region or this specific people. And so the idea of getting this a portion of the prophecy wrong is kind of exciting and fascinating. You're like, oh, no, it's much bigger than that. It's kind of a cool thought to try to like put myself in Paul's shoes, who is really the revelatory individual in this situation. Like, I got to tell people. It's like...
It's what I do now.
I'm sure there's some Greeks that have maybe even heard this and thought like, oh, what a funny bunch of people that, you know, feel this way or think that their God is going to, you know, do this thing. And Paul's like, no, it's us too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's again,
kind of fun.
We talk about it so many times on this podcast, but it's important to keep in mind the mindset that gods were local.
Yeah.
And this is Paul saying, nope, here, once again, this is the one true God for all people everywhere, including you wherever you are. He never says Ephesians.
Right. Anything else about the Ephesians? reference here.
There was something. Boy, these sentences are hugely long.
Yes, they are. Even the punctuation cannot help it.
Well, and part of it is, since I have a nicely annotated Bible, they're about a 13 or 14 footnotes saying, or I might say this. yeah. Oh boy. Okay. We could talk forever about linguistics here. That would be very boring if no one can see what I'm actually pointing at.
Right.
Not good for a podcast.
Yeah, no, there's I was giving it another glance on here and realizing, like, okay, yeah, the original writing has no punctuation. So there's no added inflection to direct you as to how it, and it really does, it does almost read like a hyper energetic 5-year-old trying to tell you a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In former generations, this mystery was not made known to humankind, as it has been revealed to the apostles and the prophets by the Spirit. That is, the Gentiles have become fellow heirs, members of the same body, and sharers in the promise of Jesus Christ through the gospel. Of this gospel, I'm become a servant according to the gift of God's grace that was given to me by the work of his power, although I am the very least of all the saints. This grace was given to me, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and all that would have been, and more, a single sentence.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. If this is Paul, whoa. Calm down, man.
Take a breath. Right? Yeah. Again, one of the reasons why, as bad as genuine Paul is, it's not this bad.
No, Paul is repetition.
Yeah. And
circular thought.
Yeah.
This is stream of consciousness.
Yeah, and you can, and as you have acted out before, can always picture some. Oh, don't forget the part about the Gentiles.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Well, but then we have to talk about the gospel of the. Yeah, a guy be equal, so can't make it a different clause.
Yeah, boy. I remember the reasons why we stopped reading.
Stop reading the epistles. Oh, to go back to what you mentioned earlier, this epistle is chosen specifically to go on the Feast of the Epiphany.
Okay, good. It would have been, you know, happy happenstance, for sure, but it makes more sense if it was. So, all right. Our gospel reading is Matthew chapter 2, verse 1 through 12. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for you shall come, from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word, so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Couple of things here that struck me on this this reading this time around. The wise men show up and ask this question, where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising. How do they make that correlation of, like, the two? Because, and the reason I ask this, because initially, I was thinking like, oh, these later verses, when Herod is asking a question, they're the ones answering it. They're not actually answering.
No, they're not.
It's his advisors and the chief priests and folks who are answering the question about this prophecy.
Yeah.
I could understand where the wise men know, like, oh, they're aware of the same prophecy, right? So what was said to Herod, they could have also been aware of as scholarly individuals and,
yeah,
you know, knowing things. But the connection to the star doesn't, like, my brain doesn't make that leap as far as, like, how did you wise men know, take the star that was rising and pair it with this prophecy?
Well, that's, yeah, the quick answer is God did it.
Cop out.
Yeah, somewhat. And so people have, for, you know, centuries now, tried to fill in the blanks. And so that's one of the reasons they're called wise men, is that to imply a backstory that these were people that studied all sorts of manuscripts from the known world, uh-huh, and kept track of all the prophecies. And kept an eye on the sky because they were astrologers,
mm-hmm,
which then some conservative Christians say, no, they were astronomers. I'm like, no, they were astrologers. in part because if you make them simply secular researchers, it takes away the fact that they actually are shifting their religious beliefs by seeking this newborn king.
Right.
So I think it's important.
Yeah,
note that they're astrologers. The simplest thing to do is to use a Greek term for astrologer, which is magi.
Right, right.
And we don't know how many there were. But anyway, so the idea is that these astrologers were kept a close eye on the sky. They saw something novel, and in their religious / professional opinion, it meant that a new king was being born.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how accurate it is, but it certainly gets bandied about that many cultures believe that a new star meant a new king born. I don't know if that's true or not, or if that's...
I like the sound of it.
Yeah. But it could be,
in
retrospect, like so many Bible commentaries, like, oh, yeah, everyone believed that. No, no that. I don't know, just to be honest. So, did they answer your question?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
So there's this reference. So it has been written by the prophet. Do we have like a direct corollary as to what is read in verse or written down in verse 6 as to like where that appears? Is that a specific shared reference that we get from an Old Testament writing?
Kind of in Micah and 2 Samuel.
Okay, similar enough.
Yeah,
got it.
And as so often is the case, it's a mashup of two different verses. Well, now verses.
Right.
Two different sections of the Hebrew scriptures.
Which makes sense. I mean, if you're playing this scene out in real time, and Herod calls for his chief priests and scribes, it's not like they've brought tomes with
right.
them and are reading directly from it. It's like, tell me about this prophecy. That one. Yes. Judah.
Right.
Yeah. Land of Bethlehem. You know, ruler, shepherd his people, Israel. That one.
Jeremy, this was your area. Right. What?
Well, Hold on. Let me go to the catacombs. Yeah.
No, Jeremy would have to. The Second Samuel. Oh, yeah. Second Samuel. There's that verse.
Right. They were going to name him Thomas, right? Was that the... No, that's a different one. Okay. All right. And then the other thing that I was struck with, the last verse here, having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, They left for their own country by another road. So they sensed that, you know, Herod was not to be trusted.
Right.
If they spent any time with Mary and his mother, you know, Jewish individuals under the rule of Herod, they might have mentioned like, oh, yeah, Herod pointed out this. Do they really have to be warned in a dream, or did Mary just go, don't trust that guy. Don't go back. Don't do that.
Well, in the Gospel of Matthew, it would have been Joseph saying it.
Okay, Joseph.
Because Joseph is the one who has the divine dreams.
Gotcha.
And gets warned where to go,
well,
where it's safe, where it's not.
I'm more pointing out, no dream required. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You meet Mary and Joseph, and they're like, hey, the king just said it. Like, have you been followed?
Yeah, that's true.
What do you mean the king sent you? Hold on. Who are you?
Gotta go.
Wait a second. I don't care about the gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Tell me more about this.
Get these shepherd boys back. We need some pack animals.
No, right. Yeah, I don't.
I'm sorry, sir. They're in the Gospel of Luke. I've got it. How are we going to get to Egypt?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's no, you don't even have to reference. Like, Mary and Joseph probably would have told him, like, don't go back, Herod.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do us a favor, please. Enter. Yeah. Thank you so much for your gifts. Please exit through the back door.
Right.
Quietly, neatly.
Do not pass go.
Yeah. All right, Joseph, we got to move.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do find that interesting. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the idea of like, you know, further God involvement or like, man, don't go back to Herod.
It sounds like a Ghost of Christmas Past. You're supposed to have more of a Gabriel vibe.
I think last time we read this though, like my thought was like, Herod, like, you know, didn't he maybe like skeeve him out a little bit? Like, tell me where this child is. Yes. Yeah. Promise I'm not going to murder him.
Or anyone else born during his era.
I am curious though. In verse 3, it does say when King Herod heard that they were looking for this king of the Jews, he was frightened and all Jerusalem with him.
Mm-hmm.
What? Why? Isn't Jerusalem, you know, part of Israel, the Israelites? Like, aren't they? They wouldn't be scared about it. Like, they wanted?
Okay. Jerusalem, capital,
mm-hmm.
Religious center, but also a political center of the Romans.
Okay.
And so the people who were the Jewish people, worshiping in the temple, living in Jerusalem, would have been really frightened that the Romans were going to pull something nutsy.
Mm-hmm.
And Herod was their agent, was their puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what do you know? They were right when then Herod would do the slaughter of the innocents.
Right.
So, yeah. I think it's as much as anything foreshadowing.
Gotcha.
That, you know, okay, now everything's being topsy-turvy and heading in a terrible direction.
Yeah, because the way it's written, it does, you know, I'm picturing this this audience chamber and these wise men come in and, you know, Herod mm-hmm. asks, what can I do for you? And, oh yeah, hey, we're looking for this king of the Jews. We've been following his star. Hold, please. Bunch of murmuring in the back. I mean, is that the prophecy? That is the prophecy. Gonna overthrow me? A big deal. A problem? Okay. All right. Go look and let me know.
Yeah.
I have homage I want to pay him. It's really sharp pointed.
Just like you.
Sharply pointed homage. A little stabby stabby. I don't know. I have a hard time imagining this playing out where Herod's like smiling through his teeth and not giving away a little of you know, his true intentions as they have this interaction.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, walking past the Magi, walking past probably hundreds of crucified people
on the way,
on the way I mean, this isn't a come.
I'm sorry, King Herod. I've seen your version of homage.
Right.
Yeah. So it is interesting, though, to we'll delve back into our first reading here. So I can see where our Christian mindset to connect things and make them one-to-one and equal and make full sense and understand. So referring back to our Isaiah reading, one wise man from Midian, one wise man from Epa, and one wise man from Sheba, gold, frankincense. And who's the other guy? What's the other guy carrying? Myrrh. Which was a burial, like preparatory.
An embalming spice.
Yeah.
Is how we interpret it.
Yeah. Clearly like a church edit.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
I feel. I shouldn't say church, but like, because at this point, at the time that Matthew was written, would not have been church established. It still would have been.
Well, church was proto church.
Proto, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. Proto church.
Copyright.
So yeah, probably makes you wonder what their version of dare I say, if this story is even true. but you know, if they do bring him gifts, what they actually may have brought him, you could very, very easily see the previous writings of Isaiah influencing what gets written down here,
mm-hmm.
as to, it's got to be gold and frankincense, right? And that's what the prophecy said. You know, I find it highly doubtful that Mary and Joseph were like, hey, Matthew, just in case you're curious, they brought us gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So write that down. You know what I mean? Like, it's not.
Oh, I've made you cynical. I'm so sorry.
I've been this way for a long, long time. But yeah, it does kind of smack a little bit of that, like trying to fill in the blanks in order to, like, you know, this does seem to fulfill the prophecy. So if they did go and pay homage to him, they would have brought gold and frankincense, and we're going to throw in myrrh there as part of foreshadowing. Is kind of the way that I'm reading it.
Yeah, and that's very possible.
But who knows? Maybe they really did bring him gold and frankincense. I just don't know, like, how did you, Matthew, author of the gospel, find out what the presents were to the child?
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, if they got gold, that would have made a big difference in their life. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Mary and Joseph get some gold. Well, maybe he's not a carpenter's son anymore. Maybe he's like, oh no, dad's a master trader and accountant. Right.
But at the time of Jesus's birth, particularly among poorer people, coins were so valuable, mm-hmm. that often it was beyond the resources of any given household to have any coins.
Mm.
So this may sound like a stretch, but it's really not. So having spices and gold, in a sense, was more negotiable for what you needed,
mm-hmm.
than having coins. Because you go, okay, we need dinner tonight, Joseph. You know, all I have is this denarius. We're going to have to buy the whole restaurant.
Mm.
Whereas by having myrrh, you can shave off some incense, you can chop off a little bit gold, you can peel off some.
Mm-hmm.
So these were more negotiable resources than currency would have been at that time.
I gotcha.
For the areas and the way of life that Mary and Joseph had.
Yeah. I guess my point would be, like, wouldn't that have given them a notable leg up in their...
Or made them immediately robbed.
And much more findable by Herod.
Yeah.
Hey, there's this guy who's, like, going around, like, trading gold.
Yeah. Whereas...
in the slums.
Yeah. Whereas having three resources that were being alternated in an unpredictable way.
Right.
It might get them further.
Shoot, yeah, maybe these were presents that they actually couldn't use because it was too draw too much attention.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't mention the pacifier because they used that.
And right, yeah, right, right. It. Here's a rattle.
And of course, we've talked about.
Thank this you, before. Magi. Are you trying to get me killed?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a certain dimension of that.
This is worth a
we,
lot.
We want to stay under the radar, right. Please. College fund.
Apprenticeship fund.
Yes.
Apprenticeship fund.
And of course, what a lot of people know is that because three gifts are mentioned, people have made the inaccurate assumption that was three magi.
It's not inaccurate. Obviously, Midian, Epa, Sheba. Three.
Doesn't say that there was only one representative from each.
One. What do you think? Two people are going to carry a container of myrrh? Ridiculous.
No, okay, the intern would carry it.
That's true. That's true. Ooh, I don't do handshakes or touches. Barnaby.
Front center.
Here's your frankincense, my lord. Nope, not to me, to them. No eye contact either. It is. I do, despite trying to tear it apart, I do like this story. I do very much like the imagery that it gives, the story that it tells,
Well, a big chunk.
We don't get too much about Jesus and his birth, interestingly enough, in the gospel writings or his childhood.
I mean, this is half of it.
Yeah.
The other half being the Luke and shepherds.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll take it.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things here, if even if you just sit down and flip pages in a Bible, this is kind of the third start of the Gospel of Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
The first one has the genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is Joseph being visited in dreams by angels.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this one, which, again, could be another start of in the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea. It has that setting of the time, setting of the place. It sounds like a beginning.
It sure does sound like the beginning.
Yeah. And the second chunk, now the birth of Jesus the Messiah took place in this way. That's a beginning. And then the very first one. An account of the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham, and onward with the genealogy.
Well, maybe we've done it a disservice. That's the preamble the foreword.
In some ways, yeah. Here's the preface.
Yeah.
Here's the foreword. Now the story begins.
Right. An introduction.
Yeah.
Story needs an introduction. Yeah, which when modern day writing styles can, kind of create a little bit of a little bit more of a traditional book writing application to this of like, I can see that. I tackled, I asked so-and-so to write the foreword for it.
Yeah.
Here's my story. Now, someone else do the foreword or the review. Who's writing the review? Where does that go?
A must read, St. Paul.
Anything else about this gospel
reading? It's not clear in the Greek, which is this was written in Greek, that the star stopped.
Mm.
And it can also read that it was just there and they caught up.
Right.
And some people have, the reason I mention that, some people have said, that can't be true because stars don't move that exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so maybe it didn't happen that way. Maybe it was in one place and they caught up with it.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, with that, we will call to a close this your podcast for January 7th, 2024. The Epiphany of the Lord. As
Epiphany
always.
Epiphany means revelation.
Yeah. Revealing. Yeah. Aha. As always, we encourage you to join us in worship. However that works for you. We will this coming Sunday have 8 and 10 o'clock with a 9 o'clock hour in between, educational hour for everybody. And our 10 o'clock service will be broadcast on our channel, HFEC Videos. We really look forward to this coming year with you, and we'll continue to bring you as poignant and insightful a podcast as we have been before, which means exactly as much as you think it does. But it's a time of renewal and hope. So we really look forward.
But I like that you set a realistic expectation.
But we look forward to speaking with you next week. And until then, I'm Ben.
And I'm Bruce.
And we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.